Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
When trained researchers applied their talents to studying the afterlife evidence, they discover that human life actually is eternal. The afterlife is real. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. My books include The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, How Our Loved Ones Contact Us and How We Can Contact Them. Our guest today is Donna Smith Moncrief. Donna is a psychologist, a sociologist, and a criminologist. She has extensive training as a researcher, and the beauty of it is that she's applying these talents, and she has many, to studying the afterlife. And in particular, her field is afterlife communication. This is an area where so much news is about to break that Donna really is working on the cutting edge. And today we're going to talk about an area that you probably don't know anything about, but you will know a lot about it within a very few years because so much is happening, and that's physical mediumship, not mental mediumship, which is what most of the mediums you may ever have heard of are, but physical mediumship. This is a brand new, very old field. Welcome, Donna. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, Roberta. So nice to be on your show today.
Tell us a little about your background and how you got into investigating the afterlife, because I think we all come from different sort of backgrounds, but I'm sure people are curious to know what brought you, a serious researcher, into this field.
Yeah, well, I have, 20 years of working with qualitative and quantitative scientific research in the area of criminology and health, and that's sort of what I've been doing in terms of applying that kind of background of research methodology to the area of survival of consciousness, which, of course, as you explained, is the area of determining whether our physical body, after the physical death, whether our souls continue on in eternal life. I became very interested in applying my work more systematically in 2010. We opened a firm called Metaphysics Research to look at studying out-of-body experiences, mediumship, near-death experiences, anything related to consciousness. I have had my own spiritual experiences growing up, and I think that it didn't just happen overnight, but I had one particular experience with a medium probably in my early 20s that was transformational. Basically, that was a mental medium which explained that my grandmother was here, and she was able to actually name the name, which Beryl is an English name that it's spelled R-Y-L, and nobody could get that. That wasn't a time when we had the internet, probably aging myself, huh?
And, right.
You know, it really, she started to give more information about how she died. She gave information about what leg was missing, and there were certain intonations and imitations of the way she would she did things in her physical life, and I had not known anything about that, and it made me curious about really what is the true nature of our reality.
So that was what started you, and so you formed an institute to just start looking at this evidence seriously. And one of the things most people who are listening will not know anything about is physical mediumship. And I'm excited about it. Frankly, I didn't believe in it, but then I don't believe in anything until I really sort of study it. I've come to believe in it now. But although it's something that people can fake, that's why it's so important to study it and really, really know you're dealing with what's real. But I know that you've done that. Tell us about physical mediumship. What is it?
Yeah, so first, as you did a great comparison, Roberta, that the mental mediumship is what most people have access to, that they're more prevalent, even though I found in my prior studies that even mental mediums, real authentic ones who can actually communicate through clairvoyance or clairaudience with those who have passed are rare. But physical mediums, there were many back in, 1848 when spiritualism was formed.
Right,
there were many, there were some questions about the controversial nature of what they were doing. So we weren't there. It's difficult to substantiate the authenticity. We have to just go by the research that we read. But the amazing thing, Roberta, is that here in the 21st century, I have been able to directly sit with who I would consider to be some authentic physical mediums who are actually able to partially materialize or fully materialize those who have passed. So let me just define what it is, because, of course, we don't want to assume that our listeners know. It's the process. Physical mediumship is the process where a control or spirit team, these are usually chemists from the spiritual dimension, they actually manipulate energy.
Chemist
Pardon me?
From another dimension. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. What's a
from
chemist
another
from
dimension.
Another dimension?
Yeah, not from the physical realm. These are spirit teams, usually people who are chemists or scientists that actually lived with us on the physical plane, are continuing. They're continuing their journey in the spiritual realm because they are continuously experimenting with us, and they manipulate the energy in the medium to create physical things to happen in the seance room.
Wow.
Some of these physical things could include, for example, a common physical element that occurs if you're dealing with an authentic medium is an apport, for example, something that the spirit team dematerializes from one place in this physical realm within the seance room that wasn't there before. Later, after the definitions, of course, we'll go through the protocol because, of course, skeptics could think, well, anybody can, bring something into a seance room.
Oh, sure.
And it came from another dimension.
But not have it appear in thin air, because that's what happens. People who have seen apports arrive say they appear in air and drop.
Exactly. And we can, and I can talk about later the protocols of what I saw and how we make sure that we know that it's materializing into the room from another dimension. Another common feature in a physical medium seance, for example, is the controls have the ability to use their thought, because the spirit realm is thought-induced, and they use the ectoplasm from the medium, which is a secretion from their pancreas, to actually make a rod, and that actually moves the trumpet. As I'll talk about later, the trumpet moves at inhuman speeds. There's absolutely no way a physical person could do this. And they do this to demonstrate that this is not coming from the physical realm. But most important, and I think why we're really, researchers are absolutely, and people are standing up and listening, is because there are very few physical mediums. One that we know of is David Thompson, for example, that's able to actually go in such a deep trance. The spirit team is able to bring through those who have passed and have them actually materialize into the room and actually reunite with sitters. Sitters are people who are like you and me who are observing the seance. So this is why this is probably one of the best pieces of evidence of the afterlife.
I think that some of the people that I most respect in this field are coming to believe that this is going to be the way that we will prove that the afterlife is real, because what physical mediums the best are able to do is impossible to refute, and it's quite extraordinary. I think it's first important that we mention there are very few of these. I know of three or four of them that are developed. How many are there, do you think?
Well, in terms of materialization, I think there are a few that have. I've actually developed a scale because it's different, right? Some are able to do different things. So, for example, like Chaim Muggy, who I talk about also in my upcoming book, and I actually saw him in New Jersey demonstrate under I would consider to be very controlled conditions. He's a German medium. While he hasn't been able to demonstrate full body materializations, he has been able to, what I saw was literally, while he was being held and in red light, I was able to see ectoplasm flowing down his face, flowing down his body, and a hand that was not a hand of anybody else's come out and move its fingers and throw out a crystal that was supposed to be healing for one of the sitters. And I saw that
within,
yeah, I saw that within literally two chairs away from me, which was like really direct. It's very direct and in red light, with people holding his hands. So we could see both his hands and all the hands of the sitters. And what's amazing about this is the way it moves, Roberta. It is not something that's constructed. And if we have time, we can later talk about the magicians who have observed these things, because skeptics raise good questions. Is this a magician? Is this an illusionist type thing? Is this a magician's
right.
act? One of the things we could bring to our listeners' attention right now, Roberta, which if we just stop for a second and think about what this German embryologist Hans Driesch said, he said that materialization is comparable to embryological development. Now, if we just think for a second about our own experiences here on
wow.
Earth, we have a
yeah.
small egg, right? We have
right.
a small egg and some sperm. That comes together, and you think of that, and then think of a large human being. It if you really think of it, something is materializing at different stages. It wasn't one
right.
thing, and now it's one thing. Why is it so difficult for us to think that something can materialize through through two things that make it happen? Is the thought from the spirit team and the energy that's created from the ectoplasm and the energy from the room, because they take the ectoplasm also from us, the sitters, and blend it.
Oh, I didn't
so
know that. So we all
yeah.
produce ectoplasm?
And, you know, it is funny. Be prepared for September when we all sit. Is that you? It was interesting when I had done my observations of both David Thompson and Kai Mugi, is that before you go into the seance room, you're asked to do many things. You're asked to, for example, not have a full meal because the spirit team already knows you're coming and they don't want you to be using your energy for full digestion. And so really what it's saying is that we all have ectoplasm in our pancreas. We don't produce copious amounts like the medium, but they have to use our energy to blend it, because it's the blending of our energy that creates, that contributes to the creation of the physical phenomena. And it doesn't hurt. In fact, you're actually more energized. For some reason, I've always been more energized when I leave those seance rooms.
Wow. Okay, this is a lot for us to digest. So let's back
it
up a
step. Isn't it amazing?
Yes, it is. Now let's talk about where these seances are held. They have to be held for most of the best physical mediums. They've got to be held in darkness. And the reason is that ectoplasm, which is produced by their bodies, and now I've just learned by ours as well, is averse to light. So substantial light coming suddenly into a room can cause the ectoplasm, which is kind of a filmy, what would you say? It's sort of like a diaphanous material that
yes.
that is produced, colorless kind of, or whitish. If that's out in the room because somebody has materialized using it, a person with a shape but without material, a material presence that can be seen, that person can walk into this cloud of ectoplasm and appear material coming out of it, just
yes.
as that person appeared in life. So this ectoplasm is out in the room, and if there's a sudden light into the room, it will then snap back into people's bodies, especially the body of the medium. Mediums have been killed
yep.
by this sudden event. Therefore, it's unfortunate that ectoplasm doesn't like light, but it doesn't like light. So we have to hold these in darkness. We can, however, as you say, Donna, use red light or ultraviolet, whatever.
Yep. And
light.
And also, I did an extensive interview with David Thompson when I was in Sarasota, Florida, in September, and that's actually coming out in the book, and I really am grateful for it, because when you really go up close and talk to someone personally rather than just, look at and observe what's happening, he also explained that they have in their own circles, because physical mediums have their own circles that they work in on a weekly basis to develop their energy. And they have been experimenting with what's called thermal imaging, because a lot of skeptics will say to them, why don't you just use night goggles? I mean, but apparently that kind of material as well, it's not that the light affects it. What it is the emission. It's the emission off of the light and off of the goggles that is interacting and actually diminishing the ectoplasm. So thermal imaging they're experimenting with because it doesn't have as much emission. Red light has a much more reduced emission, which is why they're able to do it. But you see, when we focus, especially with people who are new to this subject, when we talk about darkness, what I found is I had enough light to see the phenomena because they use luminous plaques. When the spirit teams are trying to have you see a phenomena, they use luminous plaques. I mean, I saw fingers that were child fingers that were not any. There's no children permitted into the seance room, so I saw those kinds of things.
Sure.
And so you are. There are certain points where you're able to see things, and in red light, one time the control opened up the curtain so that we could be sure that. The medium was still gagged and tied. I mean, I know that sounds awful to new listeners, but we didn't discuss the protocol. Tied and entranced.
Let's talk about that quickly because people, until you're familiar with what's done and why, it can be very difficult for people to understand why these things are necessary.
Yeah.
But because it has to be held in darkness, this kind of seance, the rooms are extensively checked. They're very, very heavily cleaned, but every corner is checked. Every possible ingress for light or for people is checked. So there's no possibility, and they're checked by independent folks, not by the sitter's team, the medium's team. So there's no possibility of anyone kind of getting in and doing something magic.
No, it's incredible. I go through an extensive, there is a research report that I've already posted on one of the medium sites, but it's so extensive. I was really impressed by how they tape the door. The medium is searched, and it's done. It's done openly. It's not like you could think, because when I went into this, you could think that there are Confederates, right? There are people that are potentially working with these people. I mean, and I got to do the independent checking. You're looking at everything. Is the chair? For example, even though they're tied to the chair one of those magician's chairs where it pulls apart and you could go around and walk around and say that you're a spirit. There are many, many,
now some people are thinking, why do they tie the poor guy up? Well, they tie the poor guy up because he's going into deep trance, and he literally is tied to a chair, arms and legs tied down. He can't move. He can't get up and walk around. That would be dangerous to him and counterproductive. So he's tied and there's nobody
and
else
gagged,
in the room.
And gagged because you hear voices.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yes.
It sounds terrible, but
it's hard to fake it, in other words, even though it's kind of amazing what they can do. I'm sorry, go ahead. I just think it's so important that people understand that there are reasons for all of the things done. And these are just problems that have to be overcome by researchers like you, Donna, who are investigating these phenomena. But the phenomena are real. I'm convinced of that now.
Yeah. And I mean, when you think about it, I mean, when you talk to, as I said, I interviewed David, and it's an agreement that he has with the spirit world to do this. He knows the impact it has had on people who have lost children. And so he gets nothing out of it. I mean, he goes into trance for 2.5 hours. He's gagged. He's tied to the chair. And he understands, as you rightly said, Roberta, there is, because he is being automated through the controls, as they are walking around, if he's not tied, he is going to follow them and hurt himself because he's in trance. So there is a benefit to him by being tied, but it also, the truth is it lets people know that the phenomena is real. It's not being produced by the physical medium. So, for example, he's gagged because, for example, in one seance I heard, over the total, let's say, of 5 seances I had with David, I heard, I think, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was at least 10 unique different voices. So either he could be a ventriloquist and should be in Hollywood, better than, you know, doing what he's doing. And or that these are real voices and people coming into the physical seance room that weren't there before. If he's not gagged, then people could think, well, you know, is he just a ventriloquist and making up?
He could be very clever, right, at mimicking voices. But the
exactly.
whole concept of the voices also is astonishing. You mentioned the trumpet, which is a very old tool in this field. And the trumpets are used by some physical mediums to assist in producing the voices of the dead. You've gone to a physical medium seance. You'd love to hear from your loved one who just recently has died. And lo and behold, in the room, there's a voice, a very familiar voice of the person who died. I mean, who could do that unless it were real? And the person who's your loved one is talking to you in familiar ways, saying things only this loved one could know. It's an overwhelming experience for people. But that trumpet, which, as you say, they're able to manipulate in air, is a place where they construct a voice box, literally, that is mimicking the voice box of the person who has died and can produce that person's voice.
Is that boggling or not? Yeah. Now, there's two, though, because that's what they call indirect voice. So, for example, Reverend Dorothy, who was the founder of the church in Sarasota that does specialize in physical mediumship, that would be a majority of the time they would produce the voice box and she would speak through the trumpet, which is the shape of a megaphone. However, what is so important for our listeners to know is that the physical medium seances that I went to were mostly direct voices. These are coming from the people who are materialized themselves. That means they've come out of the ectoplasm. There's no voice box at all. They are using what's called an ectoplasmic mask. And once they talk into the mask, the vibratory tones that are produced in that mask becomes audible to the sitters as decibels, as sound to us. So
but as their voices, so they sound like themselves, even though this is the full body of the person you love who recently died. The full body is there, and the voice box has been replicated inside the mask of that being so that even the voice is familiar. Isn't that amazing and wonderful? Wow.
Yeah, and it takes them a lot of practice, and this is one of the challenges of physical mediumship. Basically, it's an important point about the actual materializations and reunions is the challenges that we have with the voices with reunions is that consider that you've just passed over. You don't have any knowledge of, unless you're a highly evolved being, you don't have any experience using the ectoplasmic mask. So what I noticed was that the voices of those past loved ones that were coming to reunite with the sitters were not as clear. They sounded muffled. You could tell, like after I interviewed the sitters to tell me, what gave you the evidence that this was your mother or your grandfather or that kind of thing? And I got the evidence I was looking for. But voice recognition is work because they have to recall through their thoughts what they sounded like in the physical form. Remember, they're no longer in the physical form.
Yes.
Spirit.
Yeah.
So this is it's a challenge for researchers. If you're focusing on identity and voice recognition, that could be a hindrance. But it's if you don't understand the way the spirit world works, then it's going to be a challenge. What I would say, though, Roberta, what's important is that the spirit teams, though, that come out and they materialize, for example, with David on a regular basis, they are as clear as day, and they sound like just like you and me because they've perfected
how to do it.
Yeah, they know how to do it. And, for example, Louis Armstrong, who I believe materializes on a regular basis in David Thompson's seance, is to be able to say, look, my voice is not something you can replicate. Nobody can. I don't think anybody can replicate. Yeah, it's so him. When he sings "Hello, Dolly," and he interacts with you and he talks with you, so it's not a recording. He talks to you and he asks how you're doing. And I can remember one of them. A lady was coughing in the seance room, and he said, "Are you okay, ma'am?" He's stop singing.
Oh, bless his little heart.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
So this
whole question of accuracy in terms of the way the voice sounds extends even to size and appearance. They have to remember what their size was, how they looked. This is basically they mentally reconstruct their physical body, its shape, its size, its characteristics, and then walk through the ectoplasm and materialize, which is incredible. And there have been there was one of David Thompson's seances in which a child came and sat on his parents' lap, right? And interacted with, I mean, imagine the joy of that if you're a parent who's lost a child.
Yeah, or the baby. And I think you've heard that from probably Waller because he was at the same seance. 30 people witnessed and especially the sitter that sat beside the mother who had lost her baby. This is to me the ultimate. That was to me the
ultimate.
Did the
baby walk in? How old was the baby?
Well, the thing is, what was interesting about this is this particular sitter had not wanted this information to come out because when I interviewed her, she was so, you could see it on her face. She said to me, I didn't know that this information would come out and she wanted to keep it private. So this was difficult. It was difficult. I walked the line of ethics as a researcher to talk about it. And I'm allowed to talk about it generally, but, you know, the age and all of that stuff. But what was so important is the sitter that sat beside her, because everybody is in a hand link, because it's part of the control for the seance to make sure nobody is getting up. And
everyone holds hands, right.
Yeah. Is that the gentleman sitting beside her, I got confirmation also from him that he felt the small hands moving up his arm, and that was a baby's hand. So it was the baby that she had lost. You cannot materialize a baby's hand. Yeah. So that to me was the ultimate evidence, but as well because she didn't want it to come out. She wasn't a Confederate. There was no Confederate here. She did not want everybody that knew her in the sitter's circle to know that she had lost this baby. So, I mean, it was incredible. And it was a large woman. Apparently, her name was Aunt May. She was a slave in, I think it was something, I don't have the full details, but I think in the early 18th century. And when this woman comes out, she wears clothes that's like crinoline, and I've heard that when she comes out, she's the one that's responsible for bringing the babies through. And her voice was just, this is all recorded. Anyone can hear it, and they can go on. I think Victor Sammet has quite a few archived recordings, and Wendy and Victor have on their website.
But let's just mention, victorzammet.com is a fount of information in that field. They're among the most experienced researchers in the area of physical mediumship in the world. They've sat hundreds of times with physical mediums, and especially David. And if you go to their website, sign up for the Friday newsletter, which is the best news you'll hear all week. It's all about this kind of thing and all the other things we're learning in this field, in the field of afterlife research in general. And if you, it's free. Just give them your email address, and it'll enter your inbox. Mine comes Thursday night in the United States, but it's meant to come Friday morning, I guess, in Australia. I'm sorry, I just had to give them a little plug. They've done such wonderful work.
Yeah, wonderful work, and I owe it to them for sort of giving me the pathway into some of these physical mediums, because the truth of the matter, and as I think you asked this pertinent question before, is this is not really that public. They have to be very careful who they bring into that seance room, and especially researchers. They're looking at us that we're just skeptical, and we're going to create also bad energy in the seance room. But more important is, both David and Kai have had situations where people something materializes into the room, and they go out to grab it. And one of the things that I think was amazing, I wasn't at the seance, but I know a credible researcher who shared with me that the actual control knew that it was going to happen and shut the whole seance down.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so that's another form of evidence,
right? It's a delicate area. Yes, it's an area where they have to be careful because you don't have to be a believer. I'll believe anything. It doesn't matter. You could be skeptical as you are, I know, Donna, and as I am.
Yeah.
But you've got to be an open-minded skeptic and someone who's not just out to prove it to be not real, because it is real. It's just a very delicate phenomenon that is difficult, really, for us still to understand. I just want to mention that this is Secret Reality, and I'm Roberta Grimes, and my books are The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch. And my wonderful guest is Donna Smith Ron Kreef, who's talking to us about something which probably many people listening have never heard of, but you will hear a lot about it in the near future. And if you're really curious, in September of 2015, David Thompson is going to be in the United States. He'll be in Sarasota, probably already sold out there. But he's also going to be at the Academy for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies, as you will be too, Donna, right?
Oh, yes.
In September. In Arizona, in Scottsdale, Arizona. Go to ASCSI.org for information. David is going to be holding seances there. People can go and sit in those seances. So if this is really fascinating to you, join us in Scottsdale and come and don't just perhaps even go to a seance, but there also will be an normal light or in low but normal light appearance of William, who is his primary control, who will step out of David, walk around the room, and talk to us. Tell us how it happens. Tell us how it works. So that's going to be really exciting. It'll be my first experience with a materialization medium, a physical medium, and it's going to be great to hear your comment on it all. Also, when you're there, hear what you have to tell us, Donna. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I just wanted to sort of give a little plug for coming
important.
To Scottsdale.
I'm looking forward to it for sure.
So, all right, so we've established that this is a phenomenon that's real, but it's rare. Why is it that now it almost never happens. Why is it that it was common, or relatively common, in the 19th century and early 20th and not now? Do you have ideas on that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think one of the reasons, too, is especially because in the World War II periods, believing in mental mediumship is much more difficult, you know, that you can talk to the dead. Remember, they're just coming out of the materialist world. They're still very much hooked into the Newtonian physics and enlightenment and these kinds of things. So it for them, if they have an opportunity to see somebody like, for example, Helen Duncan, for example, who was doing seances during World War II. In fact, she was literally jailed for giving out secrets, wartime secrets.
Oh my goodness.
She would get information from sailors who died in the war, and yet that was a secret. Yeah, it's an amazing story. I talk about it in my upcoming book, but the point is that that society would be ready to potentially believe. If a physical medium could materialize someone that they lost, something physical, see something, hear something, feel something, rather than just get unique pieces of information that no one else could know, it would just be more real for them. And so I think that physical mediumship was more possible as well. I think because we have some, in the history, we have people like Alec Harris, who I also talk about in my book, which he was actually able to materialize in full light, a full body, and the evidence behind it is spectacular. And I think what it is that I've heard theories that, for example, the lights that we're using in video, the lighting just in general, historically, is different than all of our advanced technology that creates emissions that weren't the same at that time, as well as the consciousness. There's a lot of factors, but the bottom line is, I think that after the war, especially when you talk to Kai Mugi in my up-close interview with him, he explained, for example, in places like Germany, they were void of esoteric beliefs altogether after the war.
Yeah.
So I found his example, his sociological example, very important. And an important response to your question is that is that after the war, people were rebuilding their communities. There was a focus on materialism again. And so perhaps it was a lag period of building it up again. And even now, it's still slow to rebuild like it was in the early 20th century.
But there's another factor, too, which I came to understand was an issue back when I was doing heavy research on the information received through deep trance mediums in the first part of the 20th century. And that's that these mediums had sort of matured during the period before even electric lighting or when it was very new. And so they spent a lot of time in darkness. And there was a fad of table tipping. They would do that, which required medium sort of psychic ability and people who are potential mediums. So they develop themselves, as you say, even today, these materialization or physical mediums sit in circles weekly. Well, they were doing that big time in the late 19th, early 20th centuries.
Yes.
And it was much easier then for people with natural abilities to develop them. And once you can go into trance, which is what these deep trance mediums did and left their bodies and let their controls take over speaking, some people then were able to go on and develop physical mediumship abilities and produce ectoplasm and allow spirits to use their bodies even in deeper ways, perhaps, than the deep trance mediums did. So I guess it's not surprising when we think about it that it's been a kind of a long, dry period for this kind of wonderful evidence. And I give special credit to the people that are sitting in circles now developing their abilities. I know of some young, potential, very, very promising physical mediums who are basically spending their lives working to develop this ability, what takes decades to develop. They're devoting
yes.
their time to it. So don't
yes.
you think they deserve tremendous credit from us?
They do.
That they're willing
they
to do.
Like, yeah, Gary Mannion, I think. I don't
yes.
know if Victor and Wendy spoke about him, but
oh, yeah.
you know, he was more working in terms of energy healing and is developing quite quickly, I'm understanding.
This is an area which is not for dilettantes. It's not for people with short attention spans, and it's not for people addicted to electronics or anything really modern. So it's not an area that most people in the 21st century are even going to be interested in developing. Even if they have the ability, they're not going to give what it takes to make that ability come real. So
well, and it's good that you brought that up, because that's part of the challenge. Is it's not every medium, physical medium that I've interviewed closely to really understand their background and the personal effects. At the beginning, there's like nausea. They some of them develop problems with their pancreas. There's social challenges, right? As I explained to you about people trying to, put their hands out into the force
oh, sure.
field, yeah,
oh,
and potentially their lives are at risk every time they go into trance. And not only that, they put themselves at tremendous risk, just like us researchers, because, I mean, we could look like, we're supporting this. They could lock us up with a straitjacket, for sure, talking about materialization of people who are dead, really.
Oh, yeah.
But they
yeah.
think about it, Roberta. They face tremendous social pressure
oh, sure.
And ridicule.
Oh, sure.
And,
yeah.
And I can tell you, I met a professor at one of these seances who told me that he could never write about it like I do or talk about it openly, else he would lose his funding and tenure. But he knew it to be true, and he knew it was the next science coming.
What a wonderful insight that is. One of the things that those of us doing this research, and I've been doing it for decades, and I know, as I know you have as well, Donna, one of the things that we have come to accept is that mainstream scientific researchers are unable, even if they could see that this is the next big thing, they're unable to get involved in researching and understanding these phenomena because they risk their careers. And that's a tragic commentary on modern mainstream science. It has a fundamental dogma. Of course, anything with a dogma, as we know, is a religion. So science
Absolutely.
Turned itself into a religion based in atheism and in a materialization. I mean, sorry about that, in materialism. So
right.
if you are an atheistic materialist, which is what scientists are required to be, you can't look at this stuff. You can't be open-minded. And that's pretty
sad,
don't you think?
Well, and also, it's a game changer, right? It changes the medical books. It changes the how anything to do with health too, right? If we are saying, for example, that consciousness is beyond the body, and we know, for example, we didn't get into it, but there are healing. I followed up on sitters who were healed during these physical seances, and a number of physical mediums that I've talked to really are now, their controls are focusing them and working with them to do healing. It changes the way we have written science and history is incorrect.
Yes, absolutely right. But tell us about the healing. People went to seances and they had illnesses that were healed?
Yes. And so in just sticking with them, I do devote quite a bit of time in my new book about energy healing. And so there's a number of people that I will go over with in that book. But if we're sticking to David Thompson, not to confuse our listeners, one of the five seances that I went to in September, they literally said, gave the sitters a choice. Do you want to have reunions? Because usually it's about three reunions that will come through. Or do we want to use the ectoplasmic energy for healing? And Dr. Slavinsky, a former doctor in the physical world, which no one can get, I don't think that's his real name. We can't get a lot of information on him and his identity. But he did healing by putting his hand over the, he explained how he did healing. He put his hand over the head chakra and literally let the energy flow through him, through the thoughts. His thoughts would flow through the head chakra, and it would create healing. Of the six people, five, I followed up with them over a three-month period right after and up to 3 months after. Five of them had healing effects, which I go into detail in a report. But specifically, I'll give an example. There was one male who he had been in a car accident, and after, I believe it was 19 years, had to have quite a bit of pain medication just to function throughout the day. And he said his pain immediately. I mean, I know, and I saw him. He was walking with a walker on a regular basis. He had no pain after had the Slavinsky healing. And when I followed up with him 3 months after, he did admit that his pain started to creep back. And he had literally prayed to Slavinsky to help him, and he had gone into a sleep almost, I think it was, I have to go through the reports again, but he was tired for literally almost a full 12 hours, could not get up, and then his pain had reduced again. And basically how he describes it is he does not have the pain medication that he used to have. He is living virtually, let's say if it was 10 out of 10 pain was the worst, he's now at 3 out of 10. And he knows it was attributable. It has to be attributable to that, because if you've been in great pain for 19 years, and then all of a sudden not been, you know. And I talk about the other five. There was one who he only experienced tingling during the healing, but he had no healing. So, but there's other factors, and I analyze it and I go through it. But I think it's significant, and they explain how they do healing from the spiritual world, which I think is important for energy healers to understand.
So we have this incognito doctor. He doesn't want to tell us who he really was. And he materializes, and he puts his hand over a person's head. And I don't understand chakras. I'm not sure I even believe in chakras. I would need to do more research and satisfy myself about them.
Yeah.
But I've seen enough evidence that there's something weird about certain parts of our bodies, which seem to be connected more directly with our non-material bodies, which we know for a fact we're all constructed like a Matryoshka doll, like a Russian doll. We're nested energy bodies. That's what we are. So this is a way for someone to access those internal bodies, and it causes healing. That's really amazing and wonderful.
And sorry, I misspoke. It's crown chakra. I should have said crown chakra.
Yes, on the top of the head, right?
Yeah, the crown chakra, which is in the head. Yeah. Some people call it head, but I just, you know, because I know we're doing teaching and we don't want to mislead people. But what is amazing about energy healing is, again, it's all about consciousness. Consciousness is not within our physical body. It is outside of our body. We are spiritual beings. We are not physical beings. We are spiritual beings having a physical experience. And so if we start to think like that, our spiritual bodies have access and they vibrate. And they vibrate at a certain level. And when they vibrate at too low levels, that's when we get sick. And so he was increasing the vibration as he was working, because he does that through thought.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So
and you know what?
The last thing about that,
Roberta, is we have scientific evidence about vibratory frequencies. Anybody can go on YouTube and look at what happens when you change the vibration of salt or water. It changes patterns. So this is not, there's scientific evidence. Quantum physics, we see this. So this is, if we can just put this new knowledge together with what we're seeing in the seance room, we'll know that we're on to a new science here.
This is a wonderful point because, and I've discovered this too as I've continued to do my research. I mean, I first looked at science because I was only interested in understanding the afterlife, but I found that to really understand the process of death and where we go after death and how it functions, I had to know more about science, especially quantum physics, as you say, consciousness research, certain aspects of energy research. And as I did that research, I came to see it really is all one science. And the fact that mainstream scientists sort of have a barrier which they can't cross, they can't look at any of this evidence, really stymies their ability to understand what's going on. It makes science almost impossible to do at this point.
Absolutely. And, but we see it, right, Roberta? We know people go to the hospital, they have chronic diseases, and the doctor, the medical community can only do so much. So when we talk about complementary energy healing in relation to our topic here, we are not saying for anybody to replace energy healing with their medical their traditional medical regime. We are saying that when that is exhausted, there are possibilities when we start to look at consciousness and vibration and how that relates to healing. So we just want to make sure that people don't, we're not actually crushing medical, the medical community. They just don't have the whole picture.
It's not an alternative, but it's an essential supplement in many cases.
Absolutely.
What's going to happen, I think, over the next probably 50 years, as more and more this all becomes common knowledge and everybody is used to talking to their dead loved ones and is used to things like physical mediumship, also medicine will be transformed. And many of the most important kinds of energy healing will be incorporated. You'll be taking a pill, and you'll be going to an energy healer, and it'll be your doctor who wrote the prescription. It's
absolutely
all part of one reality. This is, we don't have a physical reality and also a spiritual reality. It's one reality, which is why I call my podcast Seek Reality. We all should be doing that. But this is wonderful, Donna. Thank you so much. And tell me more now about your book, which you've mentioned a couple of times. I know you have a book coming out in really just a few weeks. What's the date of it that is coming out?
Yes. So the title is Medium 9, The Transformational Power of Spiritual Energy. And I go over, I do talk very in detail about physical mediumship, out-of-body experiences, energy healing is a big focus, past life regression. And really a lot of it is for people to help them understand not only the evidence but the case studies and how they can access this to have an impact on their life and well-being. And that's going to be coming out at the end of March this year. So we're looking at March 28th, 2015. That's accessible online at every bookstore online it will be.
So it's Medium, M-E-D-I-U-M, 9. Okay.
9, The Transformational Power of Spiritual Energy.
Wow. Well, I'm certainly going to read that one. That's going to be very exciting. More and more I'm coming to understand that this notion of looking at energy is a key part of researching the afterlife. I mean, I've been very sort of dry and evidence-based and factual when I looked at the afterlife and at the afterlife evidence, but it's all energy. as you say, we are energy beings. And it turns out that all of reality really is energy. The whole universe is energy. And for us to ignore that crucial fact makes it very difficult for us to understand what's going on. So
absolutely,
that's a very timely book. I'm so appreciative that you've written that.
Thank you.
I should say, too, that if you're interested in what Donna Smith Moncrief is talking about, and I certainly am, she's going to be at the conference in Scottsdale in September of 2015, put on by the Academy for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies. It's going to be a great conference. It's called Life in the Afterlife. And the wonderful thing about it is there's so many experts like Donna who are working in their own separate areas. We're all going to come together and give us what they know. Some of the leading lights in this field are going to be at that conference. And as I say, David Thompson is expected to be there, and he's going to be putting on seances that you can attend, and he is going to also be sitting in a larger group and allowing William, who is a very funny man. He speaks as a sort of 19th century British fellow with a wonderful accent, and he's very tall. He's going to be there, and he's going to talk about all of this to us directly while David is in his trance. It's going to be life-transforming to see all of this happen.
Yes, and William does give some amazing moral platitudes that I detail. He's like talking to someone in the spirit world. What better evidence
right,
can you get?
Right. That's where he lives. So he's going to sort of come and visit us just briefly. And this is part, I think, of David's willingness to be more open about what's true about his life and about our lives. I think we're going to see a lot more of him and of a few others in the mainstream media. It's just too interesting for it to be hidden for very much longer, that all of this is going on. So this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you really grasp what all of that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're coming to understand about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just go there and search on Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. There's about a year and a half of podcast interviews like this one there, and I hear from people all the time who are just discovering them. I'm very excited about the fact that we have 200,000 subscribers now. Thank you so much. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which explores all the ways that the dead are working to contact us, and they're working hard. I'm going to do a podcast on my own at some point soon, just talking about all the different things the dead are doing and how they do them, just to let us know that they're still alive. I'll also talk there about some of the cutting-edge ways, like David Thompson's wonderful, wonderful physical mediumship, that we're finding that we can directly contact the dead and speak with them and meet with them as if they aren't gone, in fact, because they're not gone. You'll find all this information about my books and also my blog at robertagrimes.com. And if you're interested in contacting me, just do it through the website. I do answer my emails. Every time someone emails me, they say, if this really is Roberta, will you please answer this question? And I always email back and say, yeah, this really is Roberta. And here is how I would answer the question. My guest next week will be PMH Atwater. For 30 years, she's been the foremost investigator of near-death experiences. She's brilliant, and she's a character, and she's fearless, and I always enjoy her. She's a fount of wisdom, and this is one, frankly, of one of the most important afterlife-related subjects. People who have near-death experiences don't die. They never go to the afterlife. But I think that if you asked most people, they would say that the single biggest thing that convinces them that the afterlife is real, it's near-death experiences, so don't miss that. My guest today has been Donna Smith Moncrief. Donna's work is proof that if you apply traditional, dry, scientific, investigative methods to the afterlife evidence, it stands up beautifully to scrutiny. You find that this, in fact, is a genuine science-based field, and it has real ascertainable facts. This is a basic beginning place for us to come to understand that all of this is real. So we're making progress. For now, Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.